Hi and welcome to Police Stories Podcast. This is a series of short stories about my 28-year career in the UK Police Force. Welcome if this is your first time, and welcome back if you've been here before. Downloads this week, very good. Thanks very much. Some good comments on YouTube. Don't forget you can buy me a coffee if you like what I'm doing. A few people have done that and I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll be okay for the sound tonight. There's a few things going on, and if it happens in the background, I'll explain what it is. A little bit secretive, I know it sounds, but it isn't, honestly. So, right, we'll get on then. This is episode 77. If you remember, I'm back in Police Scotland, and I'm on response, back in uniform on the street, dealing with kind of whatever comes through the door, as it were, or on the phone. And as we've discussed many times, you know, a huge variety of calls, lots and lots of things going on, very much at the sharp end on response. So this particular night, I was on a night shift. I was crewed up with my neighbour, if you remember, that's what they're called, your colleague beside you in the car in Scotland. They're called neighbours. And one of my favourite neighbours to work with, very experienced, and really helped me a lot when I came to Police Scotland. I was very appreciative of everything she did for me. And we got on very well, just seemed to sort of click. I think sometimes she was perhaps surprised at how I dealt with things. She had all the technical knowledge for sure, particularly in Scotland, but perhaps sometimes I had, you know, different ways of dealing with things. Anyway, we'd had a call, and it was, you know, just about the most straightforward sort of call you can get in the police. It was reports of a disturbance. That was basically it. That was the call. Sound of smashing glass. It was an anonymous call. We didn't know where it had come from. Could have come from anywhere. We headed out to the address. Now, as soon as the address came out, my colleague kind of rolled her eyes, and I realised that she had prior knowledge, you know, of this address and almost certainly the person at the address. Now, it turns out this address had a female there that was quite well known to the local police. Let's call her Sharon. Ah, now the noise I was telling you about in the background is about to start, unfortunately. I'm fairly near a fighter base, and it seems that they have decided right now to start having an exercise, some sort of aerial dogfight right above me. So I apologise if you're getting a bit of that in the background, but hopefully it's not too bad. So back to Sharon. Basic call, disturbance, sounds of smashing glass. That was all we had. So we went to the address, and my colleague said, you know, I've been here a few times. This female can be a pain. She can kick off. You know, we might need another unit. And I said, well, you know, let's just play it by ear. We'll go along and see what happens. So we turned up at the address, quite a big, grand, you know, detached house, and knocked on the door, had a listen before we did that. No sounds, no smashing glass, you know, nothing that concerned us at all. Knocked on the door, and the door opened quite slowly, and there was a young girl who answered it. She was about maybe 10 or 12 years old, something like that. Big wide eyes, kind of seeing two uniformed cops, you know, on her doorstep. And I just said to her, you know, is mum there, please? You know, can we have a word? So she just sort of nodded, didn't really say anything, nodded, closed the door and disappeared again. I think she thought she'd closed the door properly, but it, as we were standing on the doorstep, still outside, it kind of swung open so we could see into this quite large hallway. And from the back of the house, I could hear a woman talking in quite a sort of loud voice, but not seemingly aggressive or anything at this point. And then as she came into the hallway, I could see this woman, and she was wrapped in a towel, and it looked like she'd just stepped out of a bath or something, because she was kind of dripping water all along the hallway. She came out, and she was very friendly, you know, not what I expected at all from the sort of briefing I'd had from my colleague before we arrived at the address. And she was like, oh, hello, officers, come in. So she didn't even sort of stop to see what we wanted or anything. It was just straight away, come in, there's no problems, you know, come through. And she sort of ushered us straight into the lounge, you know, and this is not what I was expecting at all. And she said, oh, sorry, I'm a bit wet, you know, I've I've just been in the hot tub. I've just come out of the hot tub. And I said, oh, I'm sorry to disturb you, you know. And this was all going swimmingly at this point. So we sat down. There was myself, my colleague, and Sharon. She was sat opposite us. And she said, so what's all this about? Why are you here, you know? And I explained to her, look, it's nothing really to worry about. I can see there's, you know, doesn't appear to be an issue. We've had a phone call that there might have been a disturbance. Somebody'd maybe heard some, you know, breaking glass or something. And so we've just literally come to check it out, you know. But if everything's okay and nothing's going on, then we'll leave you to it kind of thing. And her face changed a little bit at this point. She kind of went from happy-go-lucky, quite frankly, to a little bit more intense, you know, a bit more serious. And she said straight away, who's called you? And I said, well, it's an anonymous call, so I don't actually know. Now, she didn't believe that at all, and that was genuinely the case. But she became absolutely fixated on who had called her. So she straight away said, was it my neighbour? I bet it was my neighbour that called you. And I said, well, as I say, you know, it was an anonymous call, so I don't know. And then straight away she was like, I bet it's that one over the back, you know. And then she would start sort of ranting a little bit about the neighbour at the back of the house, you know. Then it was the neighbour at the side, then the neighbour the other side of the road, you know. But unfortunately, what I could see was happening, she definitely had a drink. And it turns out that this was very much this woman's issue. She had a bit of a drink problem, although it seemed to be occasional. But, you know, rather than sort of drinking socially, she seemed to every now and then hit the bottle. But when she did, she really hit it. And unfortunately, as we probably all know somebody like this, she was not a nice drunk, you know. So she'd had a good drink for sure. We could smell it. We could see it on her eyes. You know, they were glazed. And unfortunately, as she was talking about the neighbours, she was getting more and more angry. You know, she was building herself up. And it was frustrating her more and more that I wouldn't tell her who called her. Now, even if I'd have known who it was, I wouldn't have told her. But obviously, as an anonymous call, I had no clue. You know, you would presume it was somebody within earshot. She got to the point where she was getting angrier and angrier, and she was basically demanding, now virtually screaming at me, to tell her who had called her. And at this point, she had a coffee table in front of her. I think it was a wooden coffee table, and there was a round glass ornament on it, which was about the size of a cricket ball or a baseball, you know, that sort of size. She picked it up, and as if to sort of, you know, really make her point, she slammed it down really hard on the table as she was shouting at us and screaming, demanding to know again who had called us. And at this point, my colleague was over by the door. I was kind of in the bay window, a bit further away from the door. And I thought she was going to throw this ornament, this glass ornament, at my colleague. You know, that's what she looked like. And she was really in a rage now. But the thing was, at this point, we really had no offences. And, you know, we were relatively happy with the situation, although clearly she was getting out of control. But that was just because of our presence. So the first stage of sort of tactical communication is, if you can withdraw and if you don't have to stay there and you don't have to make arrests, then do it. So I think at this point, her husband maybe came in as well. He came into the edge of the room, the lounge, I think it was, and just said, you know, look, she's getting angry. You know, I don't like how this is going. I don't want you here. I'd like you to leave, please. And again, you know, there was no reason for us to be there, having established that there wasn't necessarily a disturbance. In fact, you could argue perhaps we were creating it by being there, although we were there legally, you know, because we were trying to establish, was anything going on. So I said to the husband, absolutely, we're going to go. You know, I can see she's getting wound up, and we'll leave. So my colleague started sort of edging towards the door. I went over to walk to the door as well, and pretty much got on the threshold of the door between the lounge and into the hallway, which then led to the front door. And she was up. She was up and in my face and very close to me. And now she's really angry and screaming, and not quite threatening at this point, but getting there, you know. And as the husband was seemingly sober and seemed the sensible one of the two, I said to him, you know, she needs to calm down. We are going to go, but she needs to calm down, you know, or this is not going to end well. And he said, oh, yeah, that's fine. No, he seemed to be on our side and kind of agree with me. And he started saying, look, just calm yourself down to her. while we were still trying to extract ourselves. But as I was backing away to the door and trying to get out through the door, my colleague had just stepped out behind me. So she was maybe one or two steps further back than I was into the hallway. The woman came right up and got very close to me. And I was fairly confident, you know, she was going to attack me at this point. That's how angry she was. She was absolutely incandescent with rage. That's a big word, isn't it, for me? Yeah, she was very, very angry. And she had her hands up, both in sort of fists. They were up, you know, sort of at her face level. And I was pretty confident she was going to throw a punch at me, I thought. And just as I was thinking this and was trying to take another step back to sort of distance myself between her, sure enough, she threw a punch, but not at me, at my colleague. Luckily, my colleague, cat-like reactions, and she took a step back, and it was a brilliant sort of dodge. She basically stepped just out of the fighting arc of this woman and this punch, so the punch didn't connect with her, but it, you know, it just missed her, because if it had connected, you know, she'd thrown it with a lot of force, it would have really hurt her, I think, or, you know, and possibly injured her. Now, at this point, we've been trying to extract ourselves, as I've said. We don't want to be there. You know, you could argue we're creating this problem. So we're trying to remove ourselves from this situation. However, there will always come a point, no matter how big or bad or ugly you are, if you overstep the mark, you know, then I don't care how much it's going to hurt me, you are definitely coming in. You're getting arrested. And this was one of those cases. We'd done everything we could to try and, you know, get out of that situation. But once you start throwing punches, you know, you've definitely crossed the line. So as she kind of recoiled backwards from throwing that punch, I stepped forward in front of her and took hold of both her wrists. Now, of course, at this point, I think I'm pretty confident I reverted to type and told her that she was nicked, which again, as I've said before, my Scottish colleagues always appreciated, because it's not the sort of thing that's generally said by the Scottish police. But of course, with my London background, that's where it came from. So I got hold of both her wrists, told her she was nicked. And my intention then was to try and spin her around, handcuff her, and that would have been that. But unfortunately, we didn't get that far. What she did was, now she turned all her anger that had been at my colleague that she'd just thrown the punch at. She stepped up even closer to me, got right in my face. Remember, I'm now holding both her wrists. And unfortunately, the next thing I was aware was a very hard contact with my groin. And basically, she'd kneed me hard in the groin. Thankfully, she just missed that vital target zone that all men who listen to this will know. And I was very lucky, because if she'd have caught me properly, you know, she probably would have dropped me there and then. So the first one hit hard, but missed. And I was almost sure that there was a second one coming. And of course, by holding both her arms, you know, I was sort of, I'd run out of hands to try and do any more with, really. So I remember I raised my other leg and sort of put my knee and my thigh across my groin area and tried to turn slightly away from her. So the next one that was coming, which I was sure was coming, you know, would only hit my leg relatively harmlessly. And that's exactly what happened. So she kneed me again, full power, you know, and there's a lot of force can be got into a knee, you know, she hit me, thankfully, on my leg. Now, at this point, I wasn't going to stand here and be a punch bag all night and take this. So the easiest thing was, we now needed to take her to the floor to restrain her. It was the only way of safely doing it. So what I did was basically pushed her backwards. And as she started to go back through the door into the lounge, I just stuck my toe behind her heel, and knowing that that would basically trip her up backwards. And that's exactly what happened. And then we just went down. And this is a classic again. And I've said this a few times, but, you know, police training college. Oh, yeah. Step forward and take this hand and turn this wrist like this and put this nice little arm lock on that. Does not happen in real life. You know, it's a proper melee. And that's what this was. She fell backwards, fell over. I pretty much fell on top of her. At this point, the towel that she had wrapped around her, remember, she was still soaking wet from having come out of the hot tub, came off from around her. So she's now laying on the floor virtually naked. you know, spitting, you know, venom literally at me, fury, screaming, you know, at the top of her lungs, right in my face as I've still got her wrists. I've landed on top of her. My colleagues come in. At this point, I think I've managed to grab my radio, and possibly my colleague did as well, and just key up the mic just enough to say, another unit, please. You know, I didn't call for like urgent assistance or a 2-1, which is your sort of urgent assistance call in Scotland. I just said, you know, just another unit. And I knew that the fact that I'd said it, how I'd said it, and also the fact that she was screaming like a banshee in the background was, you know, going to get my colleagues' attention. And also most of my colleagues that were local and had been there for a while already knew the call we were going to, who we were dealing with, and the address we were at. So they were kind of half expecting, you know, trouble. So in fact, I later learned that two or three of the cars that were on had sort of moved closer to the address in anticipation of exactly this happening. And I was very grateful for that, because it turned into, you know, an old fashioned bun fight, basically. She was struggling crazily. She was trying to punch me. She was not intentionally spitting in my face, but because she was screaming so close to me, I was getting all spittle on my face. You know, it was really unpleasant. And of course, you know, she's naked on the floor with me on top of her. It's not a good look, to be honest with you. And my female colleague was also, you know, wrestling with her other arm, and we were trying to get her arms out to one side so that we could flip her over and actually get her handcuffed. But to be honest with you, we were struggling. Now you might go, well, that's ridiculous. There's two of you and it's just a woman, you know. And I know some people will be going, you can't say that. But it's never a good look with, you know, male cops wrestling with females. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter male or female. You know, if they're extremely violent, they have to be restrained. There's only so nice you can be about this. So this was definitely turning into an old-fashioned, you know, bun fight, basically. While we were still trying to struggle and turn her over, I think I had hold of one wrist and my colleague had hold of the other, and we were trying to sort of turn her over, but she was fighting and trying to get her knees up to either kick or knee us again. I was still trying to sort of cover my groin area, because obviously that was a favourite attack area for her. And at which point, the first colleague arrived, and he stuck his head around a corner, and we were still kind of mid-fight with this woman. And he said to me, all right, everything all right? Kind of obvious that it wasn't, but it did make me chuckle later. At which point I said, yeah, no problems. You know, a classic understatement. As I said that, she'd wriggled her legs free enough to be able to arch her back, and she got her leg out from underneath me. And then I'm still not quite sure how she did it, turned slightly side onto me, and then managed to kick me full power straight across the side of my face and my jaw, just as I was replying to my colleague, yeah, no problems. So he obviously saw what was happening, came diving in. Along with him, I think another maybe two or three officers turned up. And eventually, with much difficulty considering the situation, we managed to get her turned over and finally handcuffed. But she would not stop kicking out. She repeatedly kicked out and was still fighting, even with handcuffs. So we had to revert to the fast straps, which we've talked about before. These big sort of Velcro straps that go around the ankles very tightly and the arms. And they then prevent someone from sort of lashing out at you. All the time this is going on, the husband is in the background and he is shouting at us, you know, that we must get off her and we're attacking his wife. We need to stop. But he was quite clever in that he never really overstepped the mark. You know, he would say things that perhaps he felt he needed to, that, you know, leave her alone, stop doing this, I want you to leave, etc. It had gone way too far for us to leave. But he never overstepped the mark enough to actually get arrested himself. He came very close. And certainly my other colleagues that were now turning up had to tell him to back off a bit. But he never actually sort of stepped up. Now, around about this time, we'd managed to get her fast straps and stood up, and we were trying to sort of shuffle her out, because remember, when you've got fast straps very tightly around your ankles, you can only take these ridiculous little sort of pigeon steps. And we were sort of pigeon stepping her down out into the hallway and intending to head for the prison van, which had now turned up, so that we could put her in the back of a cell van. Now, at this point, her mum and dad turned up. So we now had three generations. Oh, and there's also a couple of kids in the background as well that are also sort of shouting at us of varying ages. So it's a fairly chaotic scene. We've got her kicking off and screaming. We've got husband moaning at us. The kids are shouting at us. Now Nan and Grandad have turned up as well, and they're all shouting and screaming. It was utter chaos, really. But basically, the other officers, and eventually there was probably maybe six or eight officers there that were trying to calm the other people down and sort of get us out of that situation. Obviously, as soon as we could, once we'd stood her up and handcuffed her, we'd recovered her with the towel, you know, to protect her dignity. But, you know, through no fault of ourselves, you know, her fault entirely, she had been naked for some of this fight, effectively, which is, yeah, as I say, never a good look for male officers. So she went into the back of the cell. Oh, before she got to the cell, she managed to get one of her legs, her ankles, free from the fast straps and kneed another female colleague that turned up right in the sort of thigh again, and caused later on some really bad bruising. But we got her in the van, and she went off to custody, which thankfully the cells were only kind of 5 minutes away, really, from the address. We got her back to the location, and she continued to go absolutely crazy. Now, most people, you know, well, some people, when they come into custody, you know, they're angry and they want to fight. But generally, if you speak to them and eventually give them a cup of tea and calm them down, you know, they come round. Then it's very rare for these people to continue to be angry in the sort of cell block. Sometimes, though, they do. On the rare occasions, they'll end up in the cell, and then they'll spend the next, you know, if they're really keen, next hour or two crashing and bashing on the cell door and shouting and swearing. But after a while, sure enough, I've never known anyone go more than about, I don't know, 2 hours, 3 hours maybe, before they just give up and realise, you know, they're not getting out, they're in the cell. Eventually they'll calm down, they'll tire themselves out. You have to go down and check on them regularly to make sure they're okay. But that's normally the end of it. But not with this woman. You know, she was another level of angry. And not only did she continue to shout and scream in the custody, but now she was generally dealt almost solely with female officers, because we had the luxury of, I think, three or maybe four female officers to assist. So, you know, she comes before the custody officer, who then books her in, asks her questions, but she won't answer anything. She's shouting and screaming. She had glasses on, and she had the towel on. And I think by then maybe we'd managed to get some clothes to take with her from the address. So we intended, obviously, to then get her dress when she was in the cell. So the female officers took her off down the cell, and they had to search her to make sure that there was nothing on her, which you can imagine went down like a lead balloon. You know, she went absolutely crazy at that as well and tried to assault them. But eventually she was kind of unhandcuffed and the fast straps came off. She was put in the cell and the cell was closed. Now, very quickly now, almost as soon as she was left alone, one of the female officers was watching her through the cell door, which they have to obviously ensure her safety. And it was lucky they did, because she'd immediately got her, I think it was her towel off, or piece of clothing she had on. I'm pretty sure maybe she had some clothing put on her at this point. And I think, I can't remember if it was a towel or a top, but an item of clothing came off and she basically formed a noose out of it around her neck and was trying to strangle herself. So, of course, they had to open the cell door again. They had to rush in there and basically get this item of clothing off her. Now, the problem is you cannot leave her with any clothing, towels or anything, because if you do, clearly now she's a suicide risk. So anyone, you know, cells are very carefully designed and made, so there's no ligature points, so they can't string themselves up, you know, and actually hang themselves. And obviously when they come into custody, anything sharp comes off them as well. So her glasses have been taken off her, because you can imagine not only is there the actual lens itself, which is glass and could definitely be made into some sort of weapon, either to harm herself or other officers. You know, the metal sort of arms, the bits that go behind your ears, can be taken off. And they're also sharp implements that can be used for hurting yourself or stabbing officers, for example, which has definitely happened before. So her glasses came off her. They basically had to strip her naked again and leave her with absolutely nothing in the cell because they were concerned about this suicide risk. So now she had to become what's called a constant watch, which means that she is literally watched for every second because the concern is, you know, in these scenarios, you might say, well, what can she do to herself now? I've seen people like trying to hold their breath, you know, to pass out and things, and they think they're going to kill themselves. Now, my understanding is the reality is it's impossible that even if you manage to hold your breath for long enough, almost certainly you'll pass out before you die, you know. Maybe there's a doctor out there that can tell me different, but that was always my understanding. But because she was constant watch, she was watched all the time to make sure that didn't happen. Now, that had to be female officers, obviously, because she was now naked back in the cell again. Certainly, there was male officers in the cell block, and I suspect she could probably hear male voices from time to time, but at no time were any male officers, you know, looking through the cell door at her. And unfortunately, this then went on for hours. And, you know, some 4, 5, 6 hours later, I was in the custody area and I could still hear her screaming blue murder at the poor female colleagues that have been tasked with, you know, this constant watch where they're looking at her all the time. And I know one colleague particularly spent something like 6 or 7 hours, you know, at various times sort of standing there and carrying out this duty and watching her. And that colleague of mine, you know, spent all that time basically getting verbally abused by this woman. Now, you know, people go, oh, well, cops are, you know, tough and they, you know, they need to have thick skins and take stuff. And this colleague was probably, you know, one of the strongest cops I've ever known. But even she, after 6 or 7 hours of constant verbal abuse and every sort of physical attribute she had been ripped apart for hour upon hour, non-stop screaming. When I saw her later, my colleague, you know, her eyes were kind of sunken in her head. And she came out of there looking like she'd been, you know, sort of 10 rounds with Mike Tyson or something. She was absolutely battered mentally because of this, you know, constant abuse she'd had for hours and hours and hours. It never stopped. You know, this woman was horrible and a real, you know, nasty piece of work. So eventually she must have calmed down in the morning. It came to, you know, at time like 7 o'clock in the morning, time for us to finish. We handed over and we left. And when we came back in for the night shift that following night to find out what happened, sure enough, she'd been charged with about 6 assault officers and various other things. But of course, she told us all along, you know, that she was going to make complaints. She was going to have her jobs and she wanted all our names and all our numbers, which, you know, were happily provided with to her. No problems at all. You know, no one had any concerns of how we'd behaved that night. You know, it was entirely on her. But this is where Police Scotland once again need to have body cams, because they will have instantly shown what happened that night and just what a state she was in and just how angry and violent she was. Because sure enough, as we all expected, the big complaint came in. And what happens is every officer that basically got anywhere near that address or her was subject to that complaint. So in the end, there was something like 10 officers, because this included officers at the station that had, you know, female officers that had gone down to the cell. Yeah, they were all included. So there was something like 10 or maybe a dozen officers that had a complaint levelled against them. Now, normally these things with, you know, body-worn cameras are very quickly knocked on the head because, you know, you can prove none of it happened. But she alleged everything. You know, we'd attacked her, we'd assaulted her, we'd broken into her house, we deliberately stripped her naked, we'd taken her glasses off her so she couldn't see, we'd abused her all night long verbally in the cells, male officers had repeatedly come down and, you know, sort of looked at her while she was naked in the cells. You know, it was against her human rights because she was left naked for hours, which she was, because, you know, as we've already discussed, you could not let her have any item of clothing or anything at all because she was immediately trying to harm herself with them. So this is how it went on. It was a huge complaint. It went on forever. Something like 2 years the complaint went on, and that's roughly how long, because of COVID, it took to actually go to court. And when it finally came to court, you know, her sentence was ridiculous. She got convicted on virtually all these things, various police assaults and what have you. You know, we all had sort of cuts and bruises from the night. And, you know, her sentence was pathetic, as they always are. I can't remember what it was now, but it was, you know, 100 hours community service or a small fine or something like that. And I'd point out as well that in the months following this, she had another meltdown on the street and was arrested again by officers, where she ended up biting a big chunk out of one of my colleague's calves. So, you know, drink and her just didn't mix. And as I say, unfortunately, when they came together, you know, fireworks ensued for sure. But yeah, one of the angriest people I've probably ever met in my career. But there we go. So that's another one for you. Hopefully you found that interesting. Let us know if you didn't. YouTube, you can make comments for sure. You know, we're on, you know, Twitter and X and TikTok and Instagram and all those things. You'll find us, Police Stories Podcast, and you can make comments, good or bad, about anything that you've heard. Next week, we'll be on to the next one. Thanks very much for listening. Take it easy. Have a good week. Cheers. Bye.